Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. The U.S. is accusing others of what it does itself. We've got that story, plus Dr. Billy Gates' fake meat financial fail. But first, in just 7 brazen minutes, thieves grab priceless jewels from the Louvre. The doors of the world's grandest museum had been open to the public for just 30 minutes when 2 burglars were lifted up onto a second-floor balcony on the building's south side. Their faces concealed, they rode a Montmobles, a truck-mounted electric ladder that is a common sight on the streets of Paris, where it's used to ferry bulky furniture through the windows of apartments. Once there, they used grinders to break a window, setting off security alarms, burst inside the gilded Galerie d'Apollon of the Louvre Museum, where a prized collection of royal jewels and crown diamonds is held in a succession of cases. They smashed 2 cases, sounded off more alarms, and snatched 8 precious objects, including a royal sapphire necklace, a royal emerald necklace and its matching earrings, and a diadem, ornamental headband worn by monarchs and others as a badge of royalty or local tradition. Always be learning in alternative media. Which was worn by Empress Eugenie, the wife of Napoleon III, France's 19th century ruler. The burglars went back down the ladder to a road shouldering the Seine and made their getaway with 2 waiting members of their team on motor scooters. In all, it took no more than 7 minutes. It was the most brazen and possibly most costly theft ever staged at the Louvre, which houses the country's most prized art collections. French politicians publicly mourned the loss and railed against those they deemed responsible, loudly demanding to know how such a thing could happen at the world's most famous museum at 9:30 on a Sunday morning, because that's when we knew you weren't paying attention. It seems like a scenario out of a film or a television series, says Ariel Weil, the mayor of central Paris, where the Louvre is located. Not only did it take place in broad daylight while the museum was open, Ariel Weil pointing out that the thieves walked off with some of the nation's crown jewels. Those are the most valuable thing, not just from a material point of view, but from a symbolic one, he said in an interview. A correction was made to this article on October 19th, 2025. An earlier version of this article misstated which item the Louvre robbers dropped in their haste to leave. It was a crown of Empress Eugenie's and not a tiara, which makes me think of the dudes moving pallets of gold under the World Trade Center buildings and suddenly like, we gotta go. Why steal from the Louvre? It may have more to do with stones than art. Everything we know about the Louvre jewelry heist from the BBC and the Wikipedia entry 2025 Louvre Robbery, a request that this article title be changed to 2025 Louvre Heist, is under discussion. This article documents a recent burglary and may change rapidly. James, I really wish the news was more about jewel thieves and bank robberies. It just feels a lot more classy.
Yeah. Old-timey at any rate, doesn't it? In fact, behind the banner, Sean was saying that he can't wait for the movie version to come out, and I think that's about right. Maybe Ocean's 15, after Ocean's 14 flops, inevitably. There's a couple of things about this story. One is that in one of the stories that I was reading about this, they made the point that this isn't even the first, like, spectacular heist that's taken place at French galleries or museums recently. There's been a few of these. At which, of course, brings with it the ominous warning that we're going to have to start taking the security very seriously at these places. So watch for complete militarization of galleries and museums in France going forward. Beyond that, I really do wonder what these guys' endgame is, because you are clearly not going to be just selling, you know, these priceless diadems and tiaras and crowns on the market, right? So I guess breaking it down into its constituent diamonds or whatever and selling those individually might be the only way you can make it. I don't know. What's the end game here? What's going on? You got any thoughts on that?
You know, that would silly. But you know how I feel about things archived and things saved. I want everything saved, everything archived, everything kept forever and ever. I mean, I think it's... We were wondering today, I play, you know, old time radio on my Monarchy radio broadcast every day. That's 1 hour that I do. and their old episodes have been playing Orson Welles' Black Museum. I think I referenced it recently on one of these shows where they talk about classic crimes in the Scotland Yard Museum of all these, you know, murder implements and things. And one of the episodes was about the value of all these diamonds. You had to kind of think, hey, maybe diamonds actually aren't that rare and valuable. From my research, it shows it's a scam run by Cecil Rhodes and CFR, Royal Institute of International Affairs, with the De Beers family, of course, all colluding to tell these people that these things are super rare. Is 2 months' salary too much to ask? You're damn right it is, especially probably in 2025. I think it's fascinating to see also when you think about the Whitneys and the arts and what the elites think is important to occult away in their museums, not just in France, but all around the world. Because I guess if you would ask the average person on the street, they might think, hell with these demons, I'm struggling to eat, and they, of course, are all in opulence. It would be like if your president were eating empanadas on TV while you guys were all starving to death in Venezuela or something. That's how we get going here on New World Next Week, episode 607 episodes of New World Next Week. In other brazen daylight attacks, China accuses U.S. cyber attack on the National Time Center. James, I was worried we were going to have to start messing with the space-time continuum. China accused the U.S. National Security Agency of carrying out cyber attacks on its National Time Center, saying any damage to related facilities could have disrupted network communications, financial systems, and power supply. The Ministry of State Security alleged that the U.S. agency, NSA, had exploited vulnerabilities in the messaging services of a foreign mobile phone brand to steal sensitive information from devices of the National Time Center staff in 2022. Hey, just be glad we didn't make all your, you know, pagers all explode. It did not specify the brand. The U.S. agency also used 42 types of special cyber attack weapons to target the center's multiple internal network systems and attempted to infiltrate a key timing system between 2023 and 2024, it said in a post on WeChat, a Chinese social media platform. The ministry said it had evidence, but it didn't provide it in the post. It said the time center, okay, thank you. This is what I want to know. It said the time center is responsible for generating and distributing China's standard time, in addition to providing timing services to industries such as communications, finance, power, transport, and, of course, defense. The ministry added that it had provided guidance to the center to eliminate these risks. The U.S. is accusing others of what it does itself, repeatedly hyping up claims about Chinese cyber threats, the Post said. Western governments in recent years have alleged hackers linked to the Chinese government have targeted officials, journalists, corporations, and others. The ministry statement could fuel tensions between Washington and Beijing on top of trade, technology, and all the Taiwan issues. The U.S. embassy did not address the Chinese allegations in an emailed response, because they don't use WeChat, because that surveils you. The response focused on China cyber attacks, calling them the most active and persistent threat to the U.S. government and companies. And in related news this past week, Amazon's AWS, Amazon Web Services, outage on October 20th knocked off all the services. Alexa, Snapchat, Fortnite, how are all the kids gonna dance and fight each other? And then pay each other with Venmo for the pleasure and more, all offline for hours. Amazon's brain drain finally sent AWS down the spout, and we've been wondering about Trump's brain drain of the U.S. as well. But the little topper to all of this, Amazon engineer had to leave his personal yacht for 4 minutes to come down and fix stuff for you losers. Distinguished engineer fixed AWS outage in 4 minutes. Boring old white guys for the win on a boat, James.
All right, some crazy stories here. On the Chinese story, I think what's interesting to me is that it is basically the flip side of what we've reported and laughed at many times over the years here, which are these hyperventilating statements about, oh my God, the latest Chinese cyber attack on the U.S. Oh my God, they stole a bunch of stuff. They almost got in. They could have shut down our power plants or whatever. And invariably, as we always point out, what on earth can the average Joe, you and me, here at our level of the propaganda pyramid possibly discern from stories like this? It could be completely, totally, 100% fabricated, or totally, completely, 100% real, or anything in between. And how would we be able to sort it out on our side? We don't have access to the server logs or anything that would even begin to allow us to take a look at a story like that. So, equally so, when the U.S. is hyperventilating about these dastardly Chinese and Russians, the Chinese hyperventilating about this dastardly U.S. attack, again, we have absolutely nothing except their say-so to take it on, so take it with a huge grain of salt. Having said that, I hope people understand, I am sure there is cyber warfare going on, and I am sure the U.S. is attacking China all the time, and I'm sure China and Russia and everyone else is attacking the U.S. all the time. I'm sure this is going on. It's just we have absolutely no insight into it or what's really taking place. So look at something like the AWS problem, the Amazon Web Service problem, the shutdown that affected me, and I'm sure many people who were online that day. I noticed a number of services, including Substack, going down for hours. So it certainly did have an effect. And if they had come out and said, yes, this was all part of some dastardly Chinese cyber attack, what would we, you know, who would be able to say no? Maybe there would be some eggheads who would be able to go, well, actually, it's the DynamoDB server failing to connect to DNS or whatever. But probably the vast majority of the public would just go along with it and start saying, well, we better bomb those damn Beijingers back to the Stone Age. So again, it's a harrowing story, given how much we are now technologically dependent, that at any time they can pull the cyber false flag switch. But thank you for picking up on specifically the note about the National Time Center. That's just a fascinating part of this story, too. And how, you know, it's a something that the average person obviously spends zero time thinking about. But timekeeping is actually an incredibly important part and an increasingly important part of our increasingly digital lives. And how that is done and what national services are set up to do it is actually a fascinating tale. I randomly was at the library here, and since I can't leave a library without getting a book, I got a book recently about time, A History of Civilization in 12 Clocks by David Rooney. And it's about different clocks from different time periods of human civilization and what they represented about the culture that created them and how the cultures used them and how it helped shape that civilization, etc. It's actually a really interesting book for any budding horologists out there. So anyway, I'll just throw that in as a little tidbit.
I think I've always been a little obsessed with time, James. I have always liked wearing watches, even just from the sort of, I guess, you know, accessories kind of feel. But I've always wondered, and what, it was my favorite movie as a kid growing up, like a bajillion other kids, Back to the Future. When I made some reference, yeah, to the space-time continuum just earlier in this episode. I think that got it into my head a bit, and I also believe, unfortunately, being raised evangelical, God's going to come back and you're going to live forever in hell or in heaven. It's a lot of heavy stuff to lay onto a little kid. The closest correlation, James, I could think of someone like the Time Administration, we have here in the States, anybody that's ever worked in restaurants, there are people that will come around and double check that your scales that you use to weigh out your patties and make your sandwiches and base your menu and your prices all on is supposed to be set correctly. I was at work once when the dude showed up, and what did he have in his... He had the little metal, like the different weighted bits. I couldn't do it. I was just staring at him, watching him. I was like, this is kind of neat. It's weird government stuff, but it's a guy in a white lab coat who looks like he's coming in to cook. But yeah, he went and checked all our scales. And it's one thing for us to speculate about the events of JFK, 9/11, Charlie Kirk. When it's a real world event, we can, for the most part, lay our eyes on and do more discernment and do more research. But if it's virtual flag, like, I don't know, we can't show you any of the logs. And even if we could, we'd probably lie about it and not do it anyway. Virtual flag terror. So where do we go for our third and final story on this New World next week? 607, we usually go to something kind of organic, or in this case, very inorganic. Green flagship Beyond Meat plunges after debt restructure. Grabbing this from What's Up With That, Bill Gates' Beyond Meat, promoted as a climate-friendly alternative to real meat, is struggling with consumer backlash against processed foods. Shares of El Segundo-based Beyond Meat fell to less than a buck after a debt deal, down from their 2019 peak of nearly $235. The plant-based meat maker has seen sales plunge from $465 million in 2021, when everybody couldn't stop flapping their gums about it, to $326 million last year as consumers return to animal protein. Second quarter sales dropped 20%, part of a broader 18% decline across the U.S. plant-based meat industry over the last 2 years. What does it cost a company when it's no longer in the zeitgeist for stockholders in Beyond Meat? Perhaps as much as 99% of their money if they bought at the top of the market, which of course we couldn't help but be like, yay! Shares of the El Segundo maker of plant-based meat. I left your fake meat in El Segundo. They're gonna get it. They're gonna get it. An investor's darling a few years ago collapsed this week to less than $1 after the company wrapped up a deal to reduce its debt burden. The deal involves issuing up to 326 million new shares to note holders. Just make it rain. The stock diluting deal was spurred by declining sales at the company. So this is good. This is good news. These are moves of desperation. We keep bailing out water, but we're still sinking. The stock diluting deal spurred by declining sales at the company, which makes pea-based foods, which isn't peas, vegetables that mimic the taste of beef, chicken, and pork, $235 down to a dollar. That's gotta hoit. What's Up With That believes there is more to this story than just straight consumer economics. We suspect Beyond Meat is a casualty of the betrayal of trust people experienced during the COVID lockdowns. The same people who promote the climate crisis also told us COVID was so severe and we needed to endure harsh lockdowns. Since COVID claims were exposed as wild exaggerations, people appear to be asking more questions about other claims they took on faith, like the claim that eating real meat hurts the planet. We suspect that companies like Beyond Meat have been caught out by this rise in public skepticism, and that would be fantastic good news this week. Reddit Army squeezes Beyond Meat a week after debt swap dilution deal, because nothing's better than some game stonking, and Trump sinks global shipping climate tax. James, some related stories there, too. I know, you can be Captain Buzzkill. This is kind of a good news story, right?
There's a lot of good news to be had from this. I will add the buzzkill to the initial elation over the dropping of the Beyond Meat stock, only to say that, yes, for people who have been keeping track of it in the past week, they'll see that the meme stalkers on Reddit have done a little short squeeze. To the moon, guys! Let's all pile on. It'll be just like GameStop. And so they did get it up. I believe it was up over $7 for briefly. It's now back down to $3, and a lot of the meme stalkers have lost a lot of money over this, as expected. But the long-term trend, I think, remains. I think, again, people are rejecting this plant-based substitute garbage that is not real food. And I think that this will probably, in the end, be the nail in the coffin of the Eats the Bugs agenda. I want to think that anyway. On the other story that we're just referencing there, the UN global shipping tax that has been, if not completely eradicated, at least postponed. So for people who don't know, the UN's International Maritime Organization, the IMO, was voting on something called the Net Zero Framework, the NZF, which was supposedly going to be this, I mean, it's not a tax, guys, it's just a penalty, a fine that we would impose on you if you go over your carbon limit for your shipping. And it would be literally every member of the IMO internationally would be obligated to make this part of their law and to enforce it. So it would, in effect, be a global tax, or at least the foot in the door for a global funding mechanism for the UN. And I've been screaming about this for years. When the UN gets its global carbon tax in whatever way it is, that is the cornerstone, the foundation for global government. And that's how they're going to get the tiny little wedge, just their foot in the door, and then the globalist beast enters. So for people who want more, I will direct them to the actual statement. Broken clocks, right, twice a day, whatever it is. At any rate, the actual statement from Secretary of State Rubio and Secretary of Energy Wright and Secretary of Transportation Duffy on taking action to defend America from the UN's first global carbon tax, where they do correctly point out this is economically disastrous and a bad idea, and we do not want a global carbon tax on the world. Well, you know what? I'll agree with them in this case at any rate, so people can go and read it in their own words there.
Sean Duffy, former MTV Road Rules contestant? Seriously. No, seriously. Okay. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is a former MTV Road Rules contestant. This is what we've gotten from draining the swamp, James. This is welcome to, yeah, my last year on the Morning Monarchy, going, okay, well, let me glance who's the new secretary of this and the blah blah cabinet of that. Oh my God. Thankfully, I'm old enough to have not watched the Real World episodes he was on. Now, I might be mixing up Beyond Meat and Impossible Meats. They're slightly different. They do have their own different personnel, but it's basically all GMO weirdness with imitation blood. That's a bit of the research I have gone into on the morning show, this weird fake GMO hemi blood. Because when you want to try and appeal to people who maybe don't want the slaughter of animals, but you got to get that fake blood, man. Again, there's all these sort of bad, just really bad ad campaigns. It's almost like they forgot how to meme. We run NewWorldNextWeek.com. That is your source for all your Corbett and Monarchy goods, DVDs, merchandise, apparel, so to speak. And that keeps us fear-free and ad-free, as I like to say. You have never seen any advertisements on our work. People take James's work and re-upload it and add it to their channel. If you've seen ads on those are those third-party folks. I do get the exclusive audio of these New World Next Week episodes that I play after my Thursday Morning Monarchy that you can find at MediaMonarchy.com/listen. And speaking of brain drain, I'm playing Ramones and Pet Sematary this Friday night as part of my annual Monarchy Movie Marathon Shocktober Surprise 5. And I even played, so as you can tell, it's not just a horror movie festival, played Orson Welles' The Trial, 1962, with Anthony Perkins. James, you did a film literature and New World Order, just kind of a short piece on that one. I was stunned at actually how beautiful and how well made it was. It looks as good as anything Orson Welles did in Citizen Kane or Magnificent Ambersons. I was able to float you a copy of that, James, so you could get maybe... It's the nice new fancy, more recent Studio Canal transfer. So it does look... It is primo. What'd you think?
It looks absolutely beautiful, and it is a fascinating movie in so many ways, but it is my first time watching it. I have read the book. I have never seen the movie. So I am at the disadvantage of going, well, that's different than the book. Oh, they changed that. Oh, that's not like the book. So I'm in that limbo. But no, it's obviously a beautiful movie. So I appreciate you introducing me to that. Having said that, I understand. Am I wrong in this? We just passed our 16th anniversary recently, and I think we didn't even mention it.
We absolutely did, and we didn't. And I heard it mentioned as part, again, of my broadcast day. I do an hour of what I call Classic Monarchy, and I'll play an episode from that day. So we could be listening in 2025 to an episode from 2015 on October 22nd or 23rd, as you might be watching this. That's the thing, man, James. It's a lot. It shows me how much work we have done. Those classic hours, really, there are times you could listen to them and go, damn, I nailed it. Unfortunately, every freaking thing I said has all pretty much come to pass now. Maybe some of the names and places have been slightly changed to protect the innocent, but it's still pretty much the same story. And I guess I had always thought our anniversary was late in October, but it's actually a little bit early in October. So that is our 16th anniversary, James. So it's getting down to about 4 years. So you and Brock start thinking about, you know, what you want to do when you come to visit the United States. There is New World Next Week, 607, buddy.
Let's just hope ice is on ice by then. Anyway, looking forward to it. Anyway, let's do it again next week. Talk to you then.
You too, buddy. Take care.